Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to an Alabama basketball edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. History has been made, so let's take some time to talk about it. Besides, what else are we doing around here? Pleased to be joined tonight with Mark, a longtime friend of the podcast, smart, analytical mind, and spoiler, a big basketball fan. Let's get on to the conversation. It's a good one. Welcome, Alabama fans, and have we got a treat for you. Joining us tonight is Mark, longtime friend of the podcast, Zoom team member, engaged with our travel team, and keen and intellectual who follows basketball better than most. Mark, how you doing this evening?
Great, Dave. How are you doing?
Man, I am doing well. We kidded before. I had to figure out how to hook up the equipment to record a podcast again. Seems like maybe we should be doing more of that. I don't know. But, you know, Alabama had a historical event just a couple of days ago, and I said I need to find someone who understands basketball and sort of the context, Alabama basketball context, better than I do. And we kind of had a little bit of a, in sort of our chat room that the group participates in. And I thought who better to come on board and talk is Mark. And I really appreciate having you on tonight.
Well, I think you might be overselling me a little bit, but I'm happy to be here and glad you invited me to chat. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I don't know that I'm overselling anything because when I wrote down my intro, I misspelled intellectual. So you have the advantage there coming and going. So why don't we jump in? Mark, Saturday night, Alabama basketball made history. And there's new two ways of saying that. First trip to the Final Four. That feels like such an accomplishment. A lot of teams in football, if we can just make the playoffs, that's the win. Cincinnati a couple of years ago. And I'm not equating Cincinnati football to Alabama basketball, but Alabama basketball making the Final Four is quite an accomplishment. It's a first appearance in the Final Four history of the program, 111 years. In your opinion, how big of a deal is this?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit the high points, Dave. It's a huge deal. It's a really, really big deal. This will hands down be the biggest game in program history. Like you said, the basketball program, it's over 100 years old. It's actually, I think, the second most winningest program in the SEC, I'm pretty sure. Way behind Kentucky, but still second up there with the second most SEC regular season championships, second most SEC tournament championships. But a Final Four appearance was kind of the last major accomplishment that was missing from the program's resume, right? So we've been to the Sweet 16 10 times, but the Elite Eight only twice, including this year, and now the Final Four once. Granted, the 64 team tournament didn't start until, you know, a little while later, 1985 maybe. So but yes, I mean, it can't be overstated how big of a deal this is to even have made it this far.
Mark, how improbable is this run in this 23-24 season? Last year's team, 22-23, was the winningest team in Alabama basketball history. 31 wins, 31-6 was the final record for the team. That was the team that was heralded as maybe being a Final Four, you know, component or a Final Four candidate. I think it was I think Alabama last year, if I'm remembering correctly, was a number one seed, one of the four number one seeds. And so you think that that's going to help you get a Final Four. Brandon Miller and so many other teams, including the stars, most of the stars for this year's team. So I feel like last year was on paper a more talented team. Multiple assistant coaches, if not all of the assistant coaches, left to become head coaches. And so it's a remake of the roster. It's a remake of the coaching staff. And we're talking long time. Antoine Petway, he's been a coach since he played at Alabama. And so you're losing some of the DNA off the bench, some of the star players, legendary players at Alabama, players that certainly could have helped this year. And this team just reset. It didn't miss a beat. There was almost, maybe just me, but an expectation this team's going to take a step back. It's going to sort of bounce back, and this isn't the year. But here we are, a historical event. It is. Am I crazy to think that? Like, it's just this almost unreal as it is, just anyways.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think this was definitely I guess you could call it a rebuilding year under Nate Oates. You're right. So in football, you're allowed 11 on-field coaches, I believe, or assistants, and in basketball, it's three on the court. And Nate Oates lost all three assistants to become head coaches at other programs, and it seems like everybody believes, but it's hard to confirm that that's the first time that's ever happened. So that was a big deal in itself. Then, as you mentioned, we had Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney, who were both first round picks in the NBA draft. Brandon Miller was the second overall pick. But in addition to them, we lost all but pretty sure three scholarship players from last year's team. One of the other big blows that you've probably heard about some is losing Charles Bediako, our 7 foot center and elite rim protector from last season. And the thing that hurt about that is he declared for the draft kind of unexpectedly. It seemed like it caught Nate Oates off guard, so he didn't really have time to prepare to replace him at the time. So it really left a gap in the roster. But yeah, I mean, I remember telling a couple friends early in the season we were, top 10, top 20 in the AP poll. And I said, yeah, I mean, it's great and all, but just this might be the last time that happens this year. We'll probably start to slowly kind of fall. I might be a little bit more cynical than some fans in that way, but I recognize it as the rebuilding year that I think it was. And maybe you were the one that mentioned it, but it does have some similarities to last year's or this season's football team, and how there was some rebuilding kind of themes in there too, and they ended up overperforming a lot of people's expectations. I'd say, just kind of taking a little step back, this is probably Nate Oates' third best team in his 5 seasons of coaching at Alabama. Now, obviously, they've gone the farthest in the tournament, but I would say last season, like you said, is his best. And then his second best was probably the 2020 2021 season with Herb Jones and Keon Ellis, who are killing it in the NBA now. Had John Petty, Josh Primo, Jaden Shackelford, but that team lost in the Sweet 16 to UCLA. So, but that's kind of the appeal to March Madness, right? It's probably the worst possible tournament structure to, if you're trying to ensure the best team in the end gets the crown. But it's also the chaos that really makes it so entertaining. Plus, it gives the underdogs hope of making an unexpected run.
Yeah, absolutely. Nate Oates, we just talked about this is might be the third most talented team on paper out of five. Complete turnover of the staff, significant turnover of the players. Nate Oates is not a flash in the pan. He's a legit high caliber coach. Talk about his approach. What sets him apart?
Yeah, so you'll hear, if even if you just watch one game, the broadcasters love talking about his backstory. He was a high school coach maybe only 12 years ago or so. So came up pretty quickly through the ranks. He was a math teacher, so he's got more analytical kind of math focused background. And so with offense, his main focus is efficiency, efficient scoring, which is like maximizing your points per possession. And so I guess first he believes that that happens through spacing and timing, which leads to his tempo, a really fast tempo and movement of the ball and players off ball. But the main things with the efficient scoring, you'll hear the commentators and people talk about, oh, his teams live by the three and die by the three. It's kind of a misnomer or misapplied though. He really it all goes back to what is most efficient. And really what's most efficient is free throws first, then layups, and then three pointers. So his goal is to make space, open up the paint, have somebody drive. If they get fouled while they drive, then that's ideal situation. If they don't get fouled, well, maybe they make a layup. If they don't get a layup off, then maybe the defense will collapse into the paint and open up the space on the perimeter to kick it out to a three and shoot the three, which is your third best option. So that's really kind of the core of his offensive philosophy. What's funny, just trying to take it back to football analogies a little bit, is it reminds us a lot of your hurry up, no huddle spread offenses that like gave Saban a heartache for a while until he kind of adapted. That's what Nate Oates is doing to the college game right now. Then on defense, and this a little bit applies to offense too, but he's created this system of blue collar points is what he calls them. So after every game, he awards a hard hat award to the player who has earned the most blue collar points. And it's kind of a made up system, but I think it has to do with how much hustle is put into a play and how valuable it is that the outcome is for the team. So a couple of examples, not like an exhaustive list, but they get 1 point for steals and blocks and 2 points for offensive rebounds and 3 points for diving on the floor for a loose ball, things like that. So it really awards hard work and hustle on defense. Now, although this year you might question that sometimes because we're maybe the 100th ranked defense in the country this year, but really if you watch them play, they move, they hustle. It's just, well, we'll get into that a little bit later. But that's NATO's general kind of philosophy, I think.
For something like, the hard hat award, right? We can hear that, and we can hear people like sort of make fun of that. For that to work, there has to be a culture. The players have to buy in, and the coach is sort of the driver of that. We talked about Oates being a legitimate high caliber coach. Is it too early to say that he's the best basketball coach that Alabama has had?
Short answer for me, I would say it's not too early to say that. This may be recency bias, but I would definitely say he is the best. Caveat is, I'm 34 years old. The first Alabama basketball coach I really was conscious of was Mark Gottfried. So I'm not really very well equipped to answer this question from firsthand experience. Gottfried got us to our first Elite Eight in 2003, I want to say, where we coincidentally lost to UConn, who went on to win the national championship that year. And then we quickly went downhill after that. So Mark is definitely scratched off the list, not in consideration. It as far as kind of how close it is between Oates and others, Wimp Sanderson, Cam Newton, anybody like that. I do think it will be much more clear looking back on his tenure because I don't think he's leaving anytime soon. He just signed a contract extension with a huge buyout that another team would have to pay to hire him. So yeah, I mean, there's a couple others in contention. I think there was a coach in the 20s and 30s who coached for like 2 decades and won a lot of games. I don't remember his name. But they were there a long time, so I think that tenure will matter in this conversation. And Oates having risen up through the ranks quickly, I just think he's got a really bright future and is going to be around for a while. Quick sidebar, just with him rising up through those ranks and being a high school coach not long ago, just another kind of connection to make is he's been friends with the UConn head coach Dan Hurley for years now. So Dan's older brother Bobby Hurley was the one who hired Nate Oates out of his high school to be an assistant on staff at Buffalo. And then when Bobby left for Arizona State, Oates was promoted as head coach at Buffalo. So he's had ties to them for a long time and has always really positive things to say about Dan Hurley. So yeah, I mean I guess it kind of going back to what makes Oates what I would say the best in just five seasons. The first or one of the years was the COVID year that didn't have a postseason. So really just counting four complete seasons, in those four seasons, he has two SEC regular season championships, two SEC tournament championships, and four NCAA tournament appearances. So obviously, if we went on Friday, that gap between him and the next best will widen even further.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
No, I think that's interesting. I went back and looked at some of the coaches, and in my mind, there was two coaches, that Oates is competing with, Cam Newton and Wimps Anderson. I think it was Hank Crisp that coached all of those years. And there
That's
was,
right.
and this was maybe pre-SEC. It was after, it was retro, in sometime in the 20s. Some publication awarded Alabama basketball the national title sometime in the late 20s. I was like, wow, I'd never heard that. We don't go around with one, on a basketball team like we do, with football. But I thought that was interesting. But CM Newton was brought in to sort of rebuild the program, and he coached 12 years. He won 211 games. Some of that drug down by what he was starting with, but he won three straight SEC titles in mid 70s. Something only Kentucky has done, and he integrated the basketball program with Wendell Hudson, and so that's historic in its own right. Wimps Anderson, poor decisions led him to only coaching 12 years at Alabama. He had 267 wins, which is pretty dang impressive. Almost a 22 win average, four SEC tournament titles, three-time SEC champion, and oh, I'm sorry, three-time SEC Coach of the Year, one-time National Coach of the Year, and the whole Plaid Palace, the whole Plaid, and Nate sort of gives into that. That's Wimps Anderson. That's his calling card. Of course, he was the winningest coach at Alabama. I was surprised to see David Hobbs was 7 years. I was surprised to see Mark Guyford was 10 years, and his numbers are pretty close to Wimps. 210 against 130 to 211 against 123. So that was interesting. Of course, the Elite Eight appearance that you mentioned, Anthony Grant, and Avery Johnson. Not a lot to say there. Nate in his fifth season, boy, his trajectory is to pass them all. It probably takes a little more time in my mind, but Saturday night will go a long ways in that direction. Of course, your first Final Four, and super excited about Nate Oates when he signed. When he started to get good, it's like, all right, you teams don't come sniff around here. There's nothing to see here. And when he signed that big contract, well, that was a little bit of a relief. We don't want him to, thinking about he needs to go somewhere else. So I'm glad Kentucky kept their coach. These things,
Oh, yeah.
we root for other teams in different ways, so we can keep our guy because we think Nate Oates indeed is the right guy. What's it going to take? Saturday, UConn. We talked about playing with house money. We've talked about, Alabama getting to the Final Four is a win in and of itself. I don't want to be defeatist in that. Every time you take the field, every time you take the court, you play to win. What's it going to take for Alabama to pull the upset Saturday against UConn?
Yeah, that's the question, right? So Alabama's played the toughest strength of schedule in the country. The last couple of years, they've played an unbelievably tough non-conference schedule before getting into the SEC play. So that's going to help prepare them. Bama plays; they're the fastest team in the tournament this year, and their tempo, it's the fastest tempo that UConn will have played this season. And UConn tends to play pretty slow. So I think that's going to definitely come into play. And if Alabama can keep that tempo up and set that tempo from the start, that's going to really play into our favor. Y'all know I'm an analytics kind of guy, and Ken Pom is the go-to college basketball analytics guy. So he has UConn's offense rated number one offense in the country, and their defense number four. Alabama's offense is number three, but defense is number 104. So the defense is going to have to step up and play kind of better than what they have shown on average for most of the season. That's clear. The teams actually played last year. UConn and Alabama played. Now, both teams, I think, only have three of their key players returning from that season, so maybe take it with a grain of salt. But just at a glance, UConn is probably better now and Alabama a little worse. And UConn won that game, I think, by 15 points. A couple key points or takeaways from that game is their bigs outscored Alabama's 37 to 11. And that was with our center, Charles Bediako, we mentioned earlier. And more importantly, Alabama was held to a 3-year low in 3-point attempts in that game. That cannot happen again on Saturday. Definitely that, that would, if you told me that that happened again, then we already know the result, right? Kind of diving in a little bit to UConn. With continuing our football analogies, they're kind of more like the 2011 Alabama football team versus Alabama being your newfangled at the time, hurry up, no huddle, spread offense, du jour, right? Like your Baylor maybe at the time, something like that. So, and I think the analogy extends pretty well. Dan Hurley has some similarities to Nick Saban. He's fiery, he's passionate and confident, and he brings that out a lot in his players. I think recently I saw a quote that was pretty funny. He's like, he said something like, "We suck at winning the close games, so we got to do the alternative, meaning just don't make it close and blow everybody out," which is exactly what they've been doing.
They're doing that pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. His son is a walk-on, so he's extra motivated to get those walk-ons on the court early, get his son some playing time. They are big and physical, especially in the interior, which is probably our weakest point. They're getting comps to the NBA teams like Bama used to get to NFL teams, which are unfounded and kind of overblown, but still it's out there. If you look at mock drafts for NBA coming up, all five of their starters appear on some of those mock drafts, whereas none of Alabama's do. Although realistically, their center, Donovan Clingan, and true freshman guard, he's 6'6". I think it's Stefan or Stefan Castle. They'll be definitely first round picks, if not lottery picks. So those are two good guys to look out for, especially Clingan. And then also there's another analytics site, Evan Maya, that I'd recommend checking out. He ranks all the players in the country and has all five of their starters listed in the top 25 players in the country. There's 4,000 scholarship players in D1 in the country, and all five of them are in the top 25. None of Bama's are. Two are in the top 50, I think.
That's
so they just really
have all-star team.
Exactly. They really are. There isn't much weakness on that team. Kind of digging into Alabama's players some. We've been without Latrell Reitzel, one of our guards, who is a really efficient scorer for several games. There's a few games a little while back. He was out with a head injury, and then he played one or two, and now he was out again for a couple games. So we expect him to be back, so that's good. Of course, Mark Spears needs to have a big game, but he's typically pretty reliable. Just quick guard with probably our best shooting percentage. I think last time I saw, maybe around 41% from three. And then our bigs, we have Nick Pringle, Grant Nelson, Mo Wagyi. They need to stay out of foul trouble with this guy, Donovan Klingon. And they got a guy, Caravan, I think is how you pronounce it. But to try to stop them, we have to stay out of foul trouble, which we've had some trouble doing in the past. We got another guy, Mo Diabate, who is a really physical 6'7" defender who could be really key to help out with there too. Just as I'm listening to podcasts or doing some reading and stuff, I'm hearing all these different narratives, and there's some of them that are in our favor, despite how much of a juggernaut UConn seems to be, or the plucky underdog who has no momentum on a hot streak. And we've found our identity. We've heard some of the players in press conferences saying we've finally found our identity. We have the experienced guards in this game, which is kind of a refrain we always hear this time of year, that experienced guards always succeed in March Madness. But I'm kind of the data nerd and analytics. There's this idea of priors, or that's the layman's term, I guess, where I guess I would lean more on believing the preseason expectations and the whole body of work rather than just these narratives that have come up the last few days. But the few other keys to the game, looking back at UConn's losses this season, they lost this to Creighton and Kansas. Both of those teams, Creighton and Kansas, shot really well from three, and a key player or two for UConn got into foul trouble. So that's probably a pretty big key there. If they did have one weakness, then defensive rebounding, at least it's not a strength. I wouldn't call it a weakness for UConn. So getting the offensive boards is going to be big. Like I said, dictating that pace, minimizing turnovers, all that's going to be key. Hopefully the last analogy to going back to football, but you know, with the Baylor kind of spread offense or whatever, we need to be that offense that keeps that tempo and spreads them out, like Saban used to hate to go against. So in this case, instead of establishing the run or running up the middle, it's driving in the paint and getting those layups and fouls. But to be able to do that on their length in the center, we're going to have to be hitting our threes, which is going to open up that paint, open up the run game, if you will, to get our pick and roll game going and stuff like that. So I guess that brings us to a prediction. I give a caveat. In our bracket competition this year, I'm losing to my wife and my daughter. So I'm not good at this. So take it for what it's worth. Vegas, I think, has it at like a 87-75 UConn win. Score predictions in college basketball, it's such a crapshoot, because you have the late game fouling and putting in walk-ons and stuff. I did see somewhere UConn is 14-4 against the spread as double digit favorites. And like I said, I tend to be on the cynical side. I love this team. I'll be rooting like hell for them on Saturday. But if I had to make a pick, I'd probably take UConn to cover the 12. So like I said, luckily I'm really terrible at those predictions.
It's a hard spot, right? UConn is the number one team, and they're beating teams with a passion. And Alabama is playing very well, but it's a little plucky upstart. And so at some point, the clock strikes, what's the expression, right? Cinderella's and clock striking midnight. And the fact that Alabama made it to the four, and I don't think this is defeatist. The fact that Alabama, in football last year, beating Georgia and making it to the playoffs, that was the win. That was the win. Now let's go out and see what we can do. And in basketball, making the Final Four, for me, that's the win. And let's go out and see what we can do. And we have an opportunity to do that against the true number one seed. And if we make a statement, it'll be one hell of a statement. And so certainly we're rooting for that. But if we had to wager a material amount of money, we might lean the other way. And I think most
Exactly.
people with reasonable thought processes get that as well. Mark, let me flip the court on you. And rumor has it, Alabama participates in another sport played with an oblong leather ball. We should find a podcast that talks about that. Spring drills are underway. What's the number one thing that you want to see from the Crimson Tide football squad coming out of A-Day?
I admittedly haven't done a deep dive into the new coach of offense and defense yet. So probably my main thing is I'm just excited to learn more about DeBoer's offense and Kane Lomax's defense. I'm hearing all the terms thrown around of Husky and Wolf and all this, and I can't keep them all straight. My head's swimming, so I need to start seeing it in action. That's maybe not a great answer, player specific or anything. But that's what I'm really looking forward to. I think we should all kind of expect the pass rush and the secondary to show some of their lack of depth. Even what I'm hearing from the open media practices or whatever is that the pass rush has been struggling. But I'm hopeful that the fall portal window will help that out and getting Caden Proctor back at tackle with maybe, I guess, Elijah Pritchett on the other side will help shore some of that stuff up. So, yeah, really, it's just kind of seeing the new system in action. What about you?
No, I think that's fair. I think there's a lot of good stuff. There's probably a list of things that I'm looking for, but the more I think about it, what keeps bubbling back up to the top is the play of the secondary. Alabama lost a number of players, not only just the two starting corners, which were very good players, but lost a number of players from the bench transferring other places, players that would be candidates to start the season. That some of the same players that I was most excited about coming out of last year's A-Day are the players that are gone that we need to replace. I'm so pleased that Malachi Moore decided to come back. That is almost immeasurable in the scale of Alabama lost seven or eight or nine secondary guys. And when you think at our most we play six and we mostly play five, we almost lost two deep in the secondary. And for Malachi to come back, I think it's significant. There's two transfers that have experience coming in, so I'm pleased with that. But I haven't seen him play. I haven't seen him play in an Alabama defensive system, so that'll be interesting to see how that shores up. And then there's a safety and another corner spot that are potentially up for grabs. And I think there's youngsters competing for those spots. And so my biggest question, my bingo, single biggest question is the secondary, and that probably comprises itself of multiple questions, but the single position group that I'm most concerned with is the secondary. And if I had to give you a second, I just want to see Connor Talty make some kicks. I don't need to spend all summer worrying about Will Reichard. I need him to have a day on A-Day so I don't lose sleep over the kicker. And we could sort that out come September, but I hope he looks really good in A-Day so I don't have to lose sleep over the kicking situation. Will Reichard, all-timer, NCAA all-timer from a point standpoint. And so it's going to be a step down. I just hope it's not a big drop.
Yep, those are some good ones to look out for.
So
Looking forward to that too, but got to focus on what's in front of us first.
absolutely, Saturday is
Got this
first and
Final Four
hopefully Monday.
game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, I so appreciate you joining us, having you on. It's been a phenomenal conversation. I think you cast a lot of light into a lot of shadows. Like you said, Alabama football fans don't always track basketball quite as closely, understandably so, but it doesn't mean there's a lack of excitement and enthusiasm for this monumental achievement and energy going into Saturday's game. Thank you for joining us and breaking that down for us tonight.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Dave. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Roll Tide.
All right, roll tide.
And we're back. What did I tell you? That was a fantastic interview. Mark is a really great guy, really fun to listen to, and I tell you, he knows his basketball. We are so excited about Alabama making the Final Four. Again, we heard it on the show. I think that's the win. Not to be defeatist about the upcoming games, but I think that is monumental for Alabama basketball, first time in program history, and a milestone that I predict Nate Oates will repeat again and again. We're super excited about Oates and the direction of the program over the long haul, not just this coming weekend, but certainly over the long haul as well. I love how we made fun of ourselves a little bit about falling so deeply into the off season. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that as well. And certainly we are preparing some upcoming shows and identifying targets for interviews. So as we get back into the spring and summer, we suspect that we will have some additional shows. If you're interested, I was thinking about this as I was about to prep the intro and outro. If you're interested in being on a podcast show, we have actually had three of our support team members that are part of a couple of even tighter knit groups from that participating in the Zoom calls and such. We've had three of our listeners actually on it shows on podcast shows. And if that's something that interests you, then it seems like the cleanest sort of slickest path for that is to join the support team so that we can get to know you in a little better way. That's not a sales pitch so much as just that's the door through which you come in and meet and greet and start to build relationships and opportunities as such as this as they present themselves. That would sort of that would be a way to go. So if that's interest to you, again, not a hard sell. I'll save those for later. But I was just thinking, gosh, we've had three listeners on the call, on the show over the last couple of 3 years, and that has been sort of the gateway for that happening. So if that's of interest to you, that's the path to make that happen. In the meantime, hey, roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach? Of course, roll tide.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.